Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:39 British Summer Time. Today is August 7th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And in China, the market has more or less been going sideways for the better part of 10 days at this point. It had that big downward dynamic last week, which capped the advance in the short term and hasn't really been able to sustain a move to new high ground. The fact that some of these banks haven't been able to sustain moves to new high ground either is probably indicative of at least a pause for this market. And the chances are that, given the fact that it is overextended relative to the moving average, we are due for a pullback in consolidation, but that's likely to be limited to a reversion to the mean rather than an outright reversal of what has been a very bullish type environment. Across Asia, in a wider context, the majority of markets were quite positive this week, and a number have moved on to new high ground. Japan, which has been lagging the West and, oh sorry, lagging the its neighboring countries and outperforming to an extent some of the Western countries, has been pushing upwards slightly this week and continues to hold above this 10,000 level on the Nikkei. Japan is a rather, it's a unique example in terms of the leadership in that particular market, because it's been led by the small caps. Small caps continue to do best, and the price to book ratio there remains well below one, which in fundamental, well, by that measure at least, suggests the market is cheap. In Europe, we see that the week has shown a number of these markets going sideways for a good part of it, but looking strong at the end of the week, and increasing numbers of European markets have broken to the upside in the last couple of weeks. And the S&P has been consolidating around this, around 1,000 point level for the better part of the week, but is a bit stronger in here today at 1,017, up almost, well, just over 2%. And this is really quite positive action. What we continue to see in the stock markets is that this is bull market type activity, that no important or globally significant stock market is breaking to new lows. The majority are making new recovery highs, and while particularly the leaders are overextended relative to their moving averages, the risk of any pullback is likely to be limited to a reversion to the mean, and for lagging markets, which are either just in the process of breaking upwards from base formations or testing the upper side of these multi-month ranges, then the likelihood of any reversion would be limited to a retest of the lows. And for the moment, there is no evidence that this is underway. The candidate that is looking most likely to be in any kind of reversionary mode is in China, and even to that extent, it still remains within this range, and it needs to weaken further to really to confirm that it has moved into more of a corrective phase. But as we said, we know exactly what to look for to suggest that we have entered a corrective phase, and China really is the only one of the globally significant markets that is showing that kind of weakness now, and then only to quite a small extent. This was also an important week for some of the commodity complex, because we saw really quite concerted strength right across the industrial metal complex this week, and nickel, for example, was up $1,000 a day for 5 consecutive days and ran out of steam somewhat yesterday, and is relatively unchanged in here today. We also saw that, for example, copper was really quite strong in the early part of the week, came off a little bit in the last couple of days, and is relatively steady in here today. The precious metals also surged in the early part of the week, but were a little bit weaker over the last couple of days and really quite steady in here today. They are, for example, silver, which had gone up and had a look at $15 yesterday and was as low as 14, 49 in here today is closing out the day in the 1460s. So relatively steady in here. But the fact that so many of these industrial metals had, or sorry, precious metals had rallied very strongly in the last 10 days or so and are pulling back somewhat in the last couple of days is really speaking more to the fact that they were a little bit overbought in the very short term. What we're also seeing with the gold market is that it is consolidating rather well underneath its highs, its all-time highs in the region of $1,000, and is currently sitting around 956, down somewhat in here today, I think down $6. So we're not seeing anything in the way of downward dynamics, and we are starting to see small changes in the way that the gold market is moving, and a little bit more on that later. The big piece of news that came out today was that unemployment in the US ticked down by 0.1 of 1%, and it's the first fall in unemployment in well over a year. And while no one is expecting that, well, there are still expectations that the unemployment rate is going to get up to 10%, the fact that it did tick downwards in July has been viewed by the market with rather well, and stock markets are performing on that basis. But treasury markets are quite weak in here today. The 10-year is down 27 points, and the 30-year is down one full point and 10 ticks. 10-year yields are up to 3.8%, and the recent high near 4% is a potential area for resistance. But the fact that that yields found support above 3% and have been ranging back up towards this 4% level is suggesting that investors are looking for a bit more of a return to absorb the amount of paper that is being pumped into the system. And they are starting to look beyond the recession, that there is speculation that the recession is ending, or that we are going to see the end of this recession at some point later this year. And they are beginning to start to price in growth in the medium term and starting to look at when that we might start to see interest rate rises. There is little chance we're going to see interest rates going up anytime this year, and it may be sometime next year before we see any type of move there. It's unlikely that the US is going to be the first country to raise interest rates. There are a number of other contenders that would be raising interest rates potentially first, because there are so many other countries that are far less affected by the credit crisis. And while some of the countries most affected by the crisis have lowered interest rates aggressively and some towards zero, there are a number of emerging economies which have certainly lowered interest rates, but they have some of the best performing stock markets, some of the best performing economies. And while they've had to lower interest rates, because the first area we're likely to see any type of inflationary pressure is likely to be in the commodity sector. Commodity-related markets are probably going to be some of those that are going to raise interest rates first. And if it isn't a commodity-related market, then it's going to be one of the markets that is particularly susceptible to asset prices increasing. Hong Kong, in one respect, is very likely or very prone to asset prices advancing, given the fact that it is exposed to the Chinese stimulus package, but also has to hold its interest rates lower for longer if the US does the same because of the peg with the US dollar. Singapore has also got a similar problem. We have the finance minister and a number of other ministers there talking about doing things to put a cap on property prices. So they are very keenly aware that asset price inflation could become a problem for them, and it is likely to be in those kinds of countries where we see interest rates starting to advance first. There are also likely to be lead indicators for when we might begin to see interest rates rising in the rest of the world, particularly those areas which were most affected by the credit crisis. Getting back to what's been happening this week, this was also a week in which we saw the dollar steadying at the lower side of its range against a number of currencies, and this positive news that we had today has seen the dollar rally quite significantly against the euro. It's up a full cent, 1.6 cents, 160 ticks against the euro, and about 1 full cent against the pound. We haven't seen those same kinds of dynamics against some of those stronger currencies, such as the Australian dollar, where it is relatively unchanged. And whereas the Canadian dollar has rallied really quite significantly against the pound over the last couple of weeks, and the pound has steadied against, or sorry, against the dollar, the Canadian dollar has rallied quite significantly against the dollar over the last couple of weeks, and the dollar has found support against it in the last couple of days. We haven't had those big dynamics similar to what we see today against the euro in the Canadian dollar, which does suggest that while the US dollar is firming at the lower side of its range in a number of currencies, it has most potential to rally against comparatively weak currencies such as the euro or the pound than it does against comparatively strong currencies such as the Australian dollar and the Canadian dollar. And of course, those commodity-related currencies have the backing of what have been really quite firm commodity markets. This has also been an interesting week in a number of those soft commodities, because we see that some of the soft commodities that have sound fundamental stories backing them up are rallying quite significantly, and cases in point would be Arabica coffee or orange juice or sugar, which is hitting new 28-year highs due to the weak monsoon in India. And I think relatively weak crop data in Brazil, as far as I know. And the grain complex is quite interesting because it had some really quite positive action last week, but has given a lot of that up, particularly in the corn contract in the last week. Soybeans had rallied more and has given up less and has been the leader in the grains group for a number of months now, but corn really does need to find support above this $3 level if it's going to remain in this developing base formation. The oil complex has rallied rather significantly this week. It's testing the upper side, or testing the recovery highs in here. It's at 71.50 as I speak, and the highs are in the region of $74. So it has firmed quite considerably over the last week. Natural gas, on the other hand, remains in this base formation development, which is very volatile, and we've seen moves in excess of 10% on one day this week and falls subsequently. And this is a war between supply and demand, where we expect volatility, although perhaps not 10% in one day. But it does suggest that base formation development is underway, that we've probably seen the lows in the region of $3 for natural gas, and it'll probably be best bought following these big pullbacks, which are unlikely to be sustained, but it will really need to sustain a move well above $4 to complete this base, and probably more like $5 before demand can really be said to have regained the upper hand. Drawing some of these themes together, what we've seen since March is that commodity-producing Latin America and the big population centers and growth centers of Asia have been outperforming the Western markets, particularly the USA and Europe and the UK. And there are a number of reasons for that. I think among those, at least very much to the fore, will have to be the fact that they are far less exposed to the causal factors for the credit crisis than we are in the West, that they remain the centers of growth, that they are surplus economies, that They've got the cash to support any stimulus packages that they have, particularly China. And we are in a new multipolar world where there are competing economic centers of gravity, and while the US is still by far the largest economy, and while Wall Street is by far the largest stock market, and the Wall Street leash effect will remain in place for a long period of time. We're certainly not anticipating that there's going to be any decoupling, but what we are seeing is that these emerging economies are rallying more in the bullish phases and are starting to fall less in the bearish phases. Now, that means that they are high beta on the upside and less high beta on the downside. They are likely to perform considerably better than other less growth-oriented stock markets in the medium to longer term. Because we're in the middle of the greatest urbanization in history, because we have billions of new consumers in the global economy now that weren't part of any economic model in the past, really does suggest that we are in a new environment, that in some respects this time it really is different, because there are just so many more people working and contributing to the global economy now than there were before. And they are working towards a standard of living that approximates that to which we pay little attention in our daily lives. And that means that their percentage consumption or their per capita consumption of commodities is likely to advance, not just over the next few years, but over the long term. And that is a secular story. At some point, that story will begin to roll over, which will probably coincide with the introduction of some new technology that will help to alleviate the need for basic resources. But we're not there yet. There is no sign that some sort of technology that could put a cap on that secular advance is anywhere in the offing. But that means that we are likely to see commodity demand rise over the long term, and something we've talked about for much of the decade has been supply inelasticity means rising demand. The rising demand part of the equation is very much in place. Supply inelasticity has been curtailed once more, and this time by the credit crisis. Before the commodity supercycle was even talked about, supply was being curtailed because you didn't have the demand component. Well, demand is very much in place today, and we will continue to see that while this demand can go in cycles, that it will continually trend higher over time. And this puts sound foundation in place for higher demand across the commodity cycle. And just like we saw back in 2003, it was industrial metals led the advance, and they're certainly leading the commodity complex in the current environment. While they're overextended in the short term, and we certainly wouldn't be surprised to see them pulling back in the short term, provided they can hold their progression of rising lows, then the bull market hypothesis in the medium term to longer term will remain very much in place. Provided they can hold above the lows posted in the last year over the long term, then we can say that the bull market hypothesis is in place. The energy markets are tied very much into that process, because the same supply inelasticity meets rising demand is very much in place in the oil market. And while the highs that we saw last year were at least in part attributable to speculation by some of the larger banks to get oil up to $150, there is sound reason why we see oil advancing in the current environment. And the fact that it is going up relatively slowly, although it has advanced rather quickly this week, is indicative of demand beginning to get back into control in this market. And we can anticipate that the highs that were posted last year in oil will be taken out at some point, and certainly not this year, maybe not next year, but at some point in the future, we can anticipate that oil will be back in that $150 level, which does put impetus that we've had a breathing space in the last year where oil prices have come down. But this can't be ignored, or we can't become sanguine about the fact that oil prices have fallen so much. Rather, we should be looking towards using the time that we have while oil prices are still comparatively low and offering very little headwind to the global economy, to use this time to put money into expanding our alternatives to the oil complex, whether that is in power generation by putting in cleaner coal or nuclear or expanding renewables where that is cost effective, or putting it into developing new technologies or into fuel efficiency. These are all things that we need to be very serious about putting in place just from the point of view of saving money on what is likely to be higher energy prices in the medium to longer term future. Of the types of things that can derail the stock market advance, the bullish activity that we have out there in just about every stock market, well, surging oil prices is one of them, and we saw an example of that last year. Surging government bond yields would be another thing that we could worry about. And monetary policy being tightened is something else that could help to derail this bullish stock market environment. When I talk about bullish stock market environment, it doesn't mean that every day stock markets are going to advance by 1% or 2% just like they did today. What we can identify very clearly is the fact that stock markets are overextended in the short term, that leading markets are probably in need of a pullback and consolidation towards their 200-day moving averages, which have turned upwards. If they find support above their 200-day moving averages, which have turned upwards, then we'll have even more evidence that this is bull market territory. In bull markets, it pays to buy when the market pulls back in one of the larger corrections, find support at its moving average. You'll make money more often than not when it begins to trend consistently by buying the breakouts. But because psychologically we are conditioned to do in the new cycle what we'd wished we'd done in the last cycle, what we continue to see is that there is a vast pile of cash on the sidelines, that particularly retail investors are slower to get back in at this point in the cycle because there is disbelief. And the first psychological stage of a new bull market is disbelief. People don't believe it. There is still a vastly high wall of worry that needs to be climbed because it's too easy to make the bearish hypothesis. And realistically, the bearish arguments could still be proved to be true. That certainly will not happen until we see technical evidence that would derail the bullish hypothesis. But if we were to sit down and argue academically about the likelihood of the bullish or bearish hypothesis to be sustained, we could easily make a bearish hypothesis. And that argument keeps large numbers of retail investors, particularly, out of the market. Institutional type investors will have to be long, at least in part of their portfolio, if they want to track their benchmark and if they want to have any hope of outperforming their benchmark in this environment, they have to be long. But in terms of the numbers of people participating in this market, we probably still don't have that many. The second psychological perception stage of a bull market is acceptance, when the wall of worry, all those bearish arguments that were predicting the end of the world and markets moving to new lows have been discounted, disbelieved, proved wrong to an extent, and people begin to accept the fact that the market can advance. We're probably not there yet. Certainly, people who are long at this stage are probably getting there, but for the large number of people that are sitting on the sidelines still at this juncture or waiting for the pullback before they can invest or countenance investing, they're probably not there yet. The acceptance part of the bull market can be quite lengthy because it takes time for this wall of worry to be climbed. And we're in the process of something to that, akin to that type of activity in leading markets. The fact that so many of the larger market cap areas in the world have not broken up to new high or new recovery highs, or broken out of their bases, is evidence to suggest that there are still large numbers of people who are not investing in this market. The first psychological stage, disbelief, can also be characterized as not participating. The fact that they're not participating means they don't believe it, and a lot of people have been burned by their recent experience in the last year. Because we are approaching the anniversary of that very traumatic event, it could be a time when we see a little bit of jitteriness entering the markets. There is certainly no evidence that that is going to be the case yet, but it wouldn't be something that we'd be utterly surprised about if it was something that were going to happen in the September-October timeframe. Of the things that could derail the bullish environment, we don't have surging oil prices, although that is a possibility for some point in the future. Government bond yields are getting back up towards that 4% level. And 4% did offer a little bit of resistance or a headwind to stock markets last time we were there. So that is something to be aware of. The fact that government bonds, there is no shortage of government bonds, that governments are putting vast quantities of this paper out onto the market in order to fill the holes that they've created in their or that in budget deficits, in trade deficits, and in the ability simply of them to be able to pay their bills, then the likelihood that yields are going to advance is quite high. When we look at the long-term 10-year yield chart for the US, the downtrend that's been in place since 1980, 1981 is still in force. You still have that progression of lower highs. And there is a strong likelihood that it bottomed at 2%. But we could be in for base formation development in this case. We wouldn't see yields pushing much above 4%, 4 to 5% for quite a period of time. But what we can be sure of is that the higher yields go, the greater the competition they will offer to stock markets, and they could help to offer competition to stock markets and derail the impressive advance that we've seen, particularly over the last month. And monetary policy is the other big thing that could help to derail the stock market advance. I posted a number of overlay charts this week of stock market indices overlaid with their respective interest rates. And what we saw, particularly if we look on at these charts over a 10 to 20 year period, is that rising interest rates kill off stock market advances. And more often than not, central banks will start to raise interest rates when they see that bubbles are developing. But what we now see is that interest rates are at historic lows in a number of countries, that liquidity is being made available in large quantities, and that interest rates are absolutely no impediment to stock markets advancing right now. When they begin to advance, it will still take a number of years before interest rates get high enough to offer an unsurmountable headwind for stock markets. But again, that is a number of years from now. There is a certain amount of deja vu all over again in the way stock markets are advancing in the present environment, because we're seeing that commodity markets are firm, that we're seeing leadership in Asia and Latin America, that a number of stock markets now have their banking indices outperforming. While this couldn't have been believed less than a year ago, and what we're seeing, particularly in some of those Asian countries, is that banks are outperforming in considerable style. But it's not every bank. There are certainly some banks that are going to have a very tough time of it for a very long time. But other financial institutions that were less affected by the credit crisis, who find themselves with more cash or have their investments in better performing assets, are performing in this environment. They are also the candidates for becoming the big players 10 years from now, when the balance sheets have been repaired, and where I suppose this is the type of environment where a bank that has an eye on a global franchise has an opportunity to expand at the expense of companies that have had a hard time in the credit crisis. If we are approaching the end of this global recession, and it certainly looks that way, then there is significant room for some of the beaten down sectors or the better performing shares within those sectors to continue to outperform the wider market in the medium term. And it will always be of interest to watch how financial shares are performing relative to the wider market. But they're unlikely to be the number one best performing sector in the new bull market that appears to be unfolding. What we continue to see is that the best candidates for new bubbles or new asset price bubbles to develop remain in developing Asia and commodity producing Latin America. That's probably not going to be, well, every bull market, every big mania ends up in excess, and that would be no less the case if we were to see bubbles developing further down the line. The fact that we have so much liquidity entering the market and so much capital flowing around the world at very low interest rates does suggest that we are going to form another bubble in the next decade. We've had three banking crises in the last 3 decades, and it could be 2017 or 2018 when we get the next one. Looking back at the commodity sector, the precious metals, because we do have this vast amount of liquidity entering the market, and the fact that we have a competitive devaluation to an extent going on between central banks, where we have just about every country adding liquidity into the market, if not to support its own economy, then to ensure that its domestic currency doesn't advance too much against those of its trading partners. And this is leading to people beginning to question the integrity of the fiat money system. And increasingly, people are looking around and saying, well, what can they hold that's going to hold its value over the long term? And the quick answer to that is gold. Gold has been rallying consistently over the last 8 years. It's been through three, and currently in the third, 18-month consolidation. On the two previous occasions, it broke upwards in spectacular style, and when it did break upwards, it was also appreciating in a range of other currencies, which suggests that it is a sound investment, or viewed as a sound investment by large numbers of people, not only because of a weak dollar, but because people have fears for inflation or fears about the integrity of their fiat currency. And we are approaching the end of it appears to be that we are approaching the end of another 18-month consolidation, and gold is within $50, more or less, of its all-time highs, and appears to be a good candidate for an upward break sometime later this year. What we can also anticipate, if that is going to be the case, is that silver and platinum will outperform. What we saw on the last occasion was that they played catch up. They weren't among the leaders, but when they moved spectacularly and outpaced gold really quite considerably. And that could easily be the case on this occasion. What we're also beginning to see is that gold is moving less in lockstep with the dollar, particularly over the last month when the dollar was firm. We saw that gold was weak. There's a certain amount of that in here today. But what we're also starting to see is that gold and the precious metals are taking their cue from stock markets. And if they're moving away from the inverse correlation with the dollar, then that is the condition where they can begin to advance in a number of other currencies, provided they are attracting the kind of bullish interest that one would expect in that environment. And we do appear to be at the beginning of that kind of process. So, wrapping it up, we know what to look for with stock markets, but they remain firm. And of course, this is bull market type activity, which by definition means that the surprises are to the upside. We are looking at the commodity complex as being a little bit overextended, but also bull market type territory. Government bond prices are, at least in part, being supported by quantitative easing by their respective central banks, but with the vast amount of paper that they're putting into the system, you can't expect the supply of something to expand dramatically and prices for it to remain at elevated levels. And with the global economy, or the global economic environment, turning a little bit more sanguine, the chances are that we're going to see government bond prices coming lower, yields going higher, and they will eventually start to offer an impediment to the stock market advance, which could end with us moving into another one of these medium-term corrections within the overall bull market hypothesis or scenario. And the dollar looks to be under pressure. While it has firmed rather considerably in here today, it is really from the lower side of the range, and it's been strongest against comparatively weak currencies such as the euro, against relatively strong currencies such as the commodity producers. It hasn't been nearly as impressive, and that continues to be the area where it is most likely to depreciate, is against those commodity producing countries. With that, I think I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.